This is a Bible Answers program in which we present a frank and earnest discussion of Bible truths. Our subject for this program, Not of This World. The only hope for this fear-filled world is found in the promises of God. Christians have been praying for centuries, Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done in earth, even as it is in heaven. Well, when Jesus was brought before Pilate and charged with treason, because it was claimed he had announced himself a king, he told that Roman magistrate, My kingdom is not of this world. Why then did he ask us to pray for his kingdom to come? Now, I must mention that this program comes from the Dawn Bible Students Association, publishers of the Dawn magazine in cooperation with many Bible study classes and the friends of Frank and Ernest everywhere. Ed, now my first question. Why did Jesus say that his kingdom is not of this world?
The world which Jesus referred to is the Greek word used in the New Testament to describe a social order. What Jesus meant was that his kingdom would not stem from a social order established by man, that it would not use methods of maintaining its authority and power which are employed by the world today. However, his kingdom, when it is established, will exercise its power throughout the earth, and it will be for the blessing of human beings.
So, that being so, you would advise that I continue to pray for his kingdom, and I will. But, Ed, hasn't it been true throughout the centuries that Christians have thought God wanted them to convert the world and thus bring about Christ's kingdom?
That's right. The viewpoint you mentioned found its most outstanding expression in the church-state governments of Europe. The Constitution of the American governments guards against the repetition of this error, although the idea is still prevalent that the kingdom of Christ can be realized only through the efforts of man to reform society and establish more righteous governments.
Was the statement that Christ's kingdom was not of this world something new in divine revelation, different, that is, from what had previously been taught in the Old Testament?
Well, far from it, Russell. In a forecast relating to present world events, the prophet Daniel wrote, In the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, but it shall break to pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Yes, all the prophets had made it clear that the God of heaven would set up a kingdom, that it would not be done through human efforts.
Ed, isn't that the prophecy in which the divine kingdom is likened to a great mountain that grows until it fills the whole earth?
Yes, but to begin with, this mountain was merely a stone, but a stone nevertheless, which was cut and shaped without hands. Without hands suggests that the preparation of Christ's kingdom is by divine supervision, that his government will not be defiled by selfish human intrigue and corrupt power politics.
You believe, then, that Christ's kingdom, or his government of righteousness, will function independent of human authority, and really without the need of human assistance. That is your thought.
Yeah, quite true, Russell. For example, after Jesus testified before Pilate that he was born to be a king, his enemies nailed him to the cross and killed him. An inscription was mounted on the head of his cross stating, in derision, that he was a king, but he died. And with him, from the human standpoint, there also died the possibility of his ever being a reigning king.
But remember that he was raised from the dead.
And that's just the point, Russell. This demonstrates the extent to which divine power is capable of functioning in order to assure the fulfillment of God's kingdom promises. It proves that the opposition of selfish men cannot hinder the divine plan to establish a kingdom of peace and righteousness.
But, Ed, here is one of the problems. After all this time, there is still no real evidence of his kingdom authority in the earth.
Well, that's true. But when he went away, an angel appeared to the disciples and promised that Jesus would come again. There had been no miscarriage of the divine plan. It was merely that God's due time had not yet come for his kingdom of promise to be established. There was something else to be done first.
Like what, Ed?
Well, the calling off from the world through the power of the gospel of a little flock to be associated with Jesus as co-rulers. In a promise to these, Jesus said, and I quote, "Fear not, little flock. It is the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom."
Then what is the condition upon which these followers of the Master will be counted worthy to have a kingdom, to reign with him?
Well, they must be willing to die and to suffer with him. Another condition is that they must maintain a position of separation from the world and its selfish aims and schemes. Jesus said to these, "In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." Jesus also said, "To him that overcometh will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne."
But Ed, as you know, many of these have died. In this case, how will they actually be in the kingdom with Jesus?
Well, Russell, here again is brought into focus the great truth that the God of heaven sets up a kingdom. For his power raises these from the dead, even as that same power raised Jesus from the dead. We're assured of this in Revelation chapter 20, verses 4 and 5, where those who overcome the world in its spirit of selfishness are promised a resurrection from the dead that they might live and reign with Christ 1,000 years.
Then we have nothing at all to do with the establishment of Christ's kingdom. Now, that's different from what has been generally understood.
No, that's not the thought at all. If we're Christians, our part is to prove our faithfulness to the Lord by following in Jesus' footsteps, doing good unto all as we have opportunity. And one important thing we can do for the people now is to help them have faith in the fact that Christ actually will establish a righteous government in the earth.
I know the whole world is weary with the endless failures of human efforts to establish peace and goodwill. To believe that God will actually do something about it, well, that is very refreshing and presents an entirely new viewpoint.
Matt Russell is the testimony of God's holy prophets. It is for this that Jesus came and died. It is for this that his kingdom will, by divine power, be established. And it is this wonderful truth that is set forth in the book, What Can a Man Believe? Will you tell your friends how they can obtain a copy free?
With pleasure, Ed. Friends, if you had the idea that the Bible is difficult to understand, you should by all means read the little book, What Can a Man Believe? Here is a discussion of the great truths of the Bible, which takes into consideration the testimony of all the prophets and apostles, and brings into focus the promises of God relating both to the church and the world. It presents the great theme song of God as sung by all his prophets, and shows that in the divine plan there is hope for all mankind. Many questions are answered in What Can a Man Believe? For example, in what sense will the dead, small and great, stand before God, as the Scriptures declare? The Bible states that in the day of judgment, books will be opened. What do these books contain, and how will they be opened? What is the Book of Life, and whose names will ultimately be found therein? You will enjoy the clear manner in which What Can a Man Believe discusses all these points and many more. So send today for What Can a Man Believe? All you have to do is address a card or a letter to Frank and Ernest, Box 60, General Post Office, New York City, and ask for the Belief Book. Just these two words are all that you need remember. Belief Book. The address again for your convenience, Frank and Ernest, Box 60, General Post Office, New York City. The Belief Book will be mailed to you free and, of course, with no obligation.
Send for your free booklet today. Mail your request to Frank and Ernest, Post Office Box 60, New York, New York, 10116. To repeat, mail your request to Frank and Ernest, P.O. Box 60, New York, New York, 10116. Or call this toll-free number, 1-800-234-DAWN. That's 1-800-234-DAWN. The booklet will be sent to you free and without obligation. This program is brought to you each week by the Dawn Bible Students Association in cooperation with local Bible study groups and by the many friends of Frank and Ernest everywhere. To repeat, call toll-free the following number, 1-800-234-DAWN. That is 1-800-234-DAWN to receive without obligation the free booklet offered. Please include the call letters of this station with your request. Ask your friends to listen to our program, won't you please? And now, goodbye, and may God bless you.